Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I'm Kent Osborne, Director of Education and Online Services for SDPB. SDPB will update you with the latest news. Then following the news, we'll discuss the latest tech, including cloud talk, what it is and what it isn't. We'll have WAS news, and we're in the middle of some March Madness. We'll talk a little bit about that and the apps that are available to help you through your day. Of course, we'll probably also wrap up the OTA conference that recently took place in Sioux Falls and much, much more. If you have questions or comments about the cloud, hardware, software, or accessories, the way to connect with us is through our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. Message us on Twitter at SDPB, and our phone number is 1-800-524-3604. Email address is midday@sdpb.org. We'll be on the air after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, March 22nd. We're coming to you live today from SDN Communications in Sioux Falls. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604. By far, the most popular way to get a hold of us is via email. Midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org is our email address. Midday at sdpb.org. Today's panelists are Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite, Nine Clouds Bro founder John T. Meyer. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going there?
Oh, hey, let's turn your mic up, John.
Had me mute. Didn't want to hear from you today.
Well, we do want to hear from you today. and you're just right in the middle of some March Madness.
I got a little double screen going right now. I have my laptop where we do the Google Hangout with Jeff out in Pierre, and then I also do have my iPad mini with the wonderful CBS app, watching a little Old Miss and Wisconsin. So a little double screen action here.
This amazes me. We just accomplished a fairly large feat, public broadcasting in South Dakota, that
sure.
is. You know, 72 games we webcast in
yeah.
a total of 6 days, which went fantastic. As far as, you know, the technical end of things, and there were some really good basketball games too, so that was kind of fun. Worked, you know, watching on my droid, watched on
sure.
iPad, you know, whatever. But that's, I don't want to call that nothing, but that's nothing compared to these huge brackets. I don't even know how many teams are playing.
Let's see, the day just kind of got started, so it's a pretty slick app. This is just the CBS one, and it's free, which is great.
It's wild that you don't have to log in or you
yeah,
don't have
exactly.
to
You'd
have
think
an account
I would
somewhere.
Need a, or, yeah, an account or a monthly, and I'm sure I probably would pay. Right now, just because of the schedule, I think there's only 2 games going on, but you know, at any point yesterday, maybe 4 or 5 games.
How big is the bracket? 64 teams?
64, yeah.
So
we're already
32
cut.
Games in each.
Yeah, absolutely. Kinda 16 yesterday and 16. These first 2 days are the busiest days because there's so many teams still. Unfortunately, my Jackrabbits got eliminated last night, but yeah, the app is super smooth. You can click in. They do show you ads, cause, you know, of course. In the actual games on CBS, there's TV timeouts and media timeouts, things like that.
Yeah, how do you see this the mobile sort of generation of things? Are more people paying attention to the games because obviously during the workday they're at work and
sure.
there's their big plasma TV is at home on the wall. So are more people going to their phones and their touch devices and things to get the probably tweets and,
sure.
and scores and things, but you're doing live video.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wish I had a number for you. A stat, I would say the answer would be yes. I'm sure it is. I mean, I think for even here on the state level, you guys doing the state high school basketball, I mean, 5 years ago, you could never even imagine to be able to do that.
Well, not at this level.
Yeah.
No. Well, you know, 5 years ago, we were just talking digital television.
Sure.
So 4 years ago, we were able to broadcast all the games, all 3 tournaments, A, B, and double A,
mm-hmm.
all at the same time, all live on television.
Because it used to be, you guys, you still do, right? You rotate one
class. There's a contract with the High School Activities Association, yep. and that, yeah, the classes rotate for our main channel. But then what we did before digital television was we would webcast depending on who didn't have the contract for that month or that year, we would webcast those games. Probably less technology involved than getting it on television, but we'd still get the webcast on and do the scores and everything like
yeah.
that. But oh yeah, the days of, we just had a request this week. A person needed a basketball game from early 2000s or whatever, and the webcast is kind of smeary, and they were wondering if there was a better copy, and it's like, No.
Yeah. Well, I think
that's the way it was back then, and it is hard to imagine because we've even had requests for photographs from, you know, the late 90s, and you know they are what they are. We were using modems and dialing up, and so the not only did we not shoot high res photographs at that time, but we couldn't move them on the internet if we wanted to.
And I think as we all become more connected, and even in a rural state like South Dakota, where you guys are able to stream high school basketball games all over the state. I think what's interesting is how are sports teams, sports leagues, arenas, stadiums going to figure out how to enhance the fan experience in the game? Because you're right, you have this 57, 60, whatever inch plasma TV at home. You have the comforts of your own snacks, your couch. You can get some beer. It's cheap. You can save money. And you get as much, if not almost more. You know, I think I'm a big baseball fan, and I believe, you know, I even admit when people tell me baseball's boring on TV, I'm not going to argue with them there, but. Baseball to me is kind of, you know, experience. You have to have the hot dog guy shouting,
the smell of the hot dogs and everything about it.
But some of these, you know, you really see these guys, that the emotion, the passion of these players on NCAA, and from your couch, it's like, I don't know, I need to go spend $500 for a ticket. I get it for free on my app, you know? I mean, it's pretty amazing. So I think the fan experience has to become more intimate and more kind of engage. I mean, people want to be there, take a picture on Instagram, and then tell their other friends, hey, look at me, I'm at the game.
I've seen that quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, so you're seeing
recent concerts and even the, you know, over the course of the football games and things like that.
So I think arenas and stadiums need to get better connected.
And on my end, Wi-Fi. It's neat to see those. It's not like they're just bragging about it. It's actually neat to kind of they're bringing you to the Metrodome, or they're bringing you to the concert site or whatever, and you get kind of transported there for a little while.
And if you have multiple friends, you can almost piece together, okay, they're sitting over there, and I can see they're on the other side of the court. You know, it is pretty interesting.
That's pretty wild.
And I did see, this is a fun stat, ESPN said last night, so they had about 8.15 million brackets were filled out on their ESPN.com bracketology or whatever they do, their tournament.
Okay, 8.5 million brackets were filled out.
8.1, yeah.
Okay, 8 million.
And after Harvard, late last night, Harvard was a 14 seed, beat New Mexico, a 3 seed. There were 1,339 perfect brackets left.
That, wow.
So they're probably all Harvard alumni.
The number's going to go down a lot from there.
Oh, you know. Yeah, that was just day one, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's
usually, I wouldn't be surprised if after today there are zero left, you know, from 8 million to zero in 2 days.
Huh. Well, that's, I've got no advice for
And we were talking here before the show. I was reading on Forbes.com. Of course, there's the annual article that comes out about how much productivity is lost across America these 2 days. and this Forbes article says it is... surveys show there is some loss of productivity, but actually it's a little overstated. They surveyed CEOs, and they were saying 57% of them admitted while they do not encourage March Madness activities in the workplace, they said they find said activities to be okay in moderation kind of a morale booster. So.
Yeah, well, you know.
So if you're getting in trouble for watching right now.
When we get Jeff on, I've got a question for him. And that would be about maybe the corporate policy for allowing, streaming audio and streaming video on the corporate bandwidth. But the thing is people are probably going around. They've got their smartphone.
Exactly.
And it's hooked up to their mobile carrier, and they've got their iPad.
I have a Sprint phone, which I would guess probably wouldn't stream that quickly on this app. But on this tablet I'm using, I have the data plan on my iPad mini. And so I have the LTE. Like, I'm not even on, you know, the SDN Wi-Fi or anything like that. So I could basically sidestep any type of policy by mobile device. That's why I kind of think, you know, we tell our clients, like, trying to ban Facebook or Twitter from, you know, for your client or for your employees is almost, we call those the modern day smoke breaks. You know, I mean, 10 years ago, your employees said, I'm going to step outside and have a cigarette. You of course say, yeah, of course. Now 5 minutes on Twitter or, you know, 10 minutes to watch a YouTube video and check your Facebook status over the course of a whole day. They're going to do it anyway.
Pick something up on Amazon that you need to get ordered, so it's there 2 days later or whatever.
Yeah, and certainly track it, monitor, and in moderation, like everything. But I just think banning it all is.
Yeah, that seems like a yesterday solution to the
yeah,
to the problem.
Exactly.
It's more on a case by case basis, I would think, rather than a blanket. And maybe that's a corporate thing, and I certainly think that maybe schools are on the other end of that.
Sure.
You know, having been in a few schools in the last couple of weeks and tried to get through firewalls to get some work done and some things like that, they have some things that are pretty well, you know, locked down.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. Things have changed very quickly.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got a lot of cloud things to talk about.
Joel's on his way, too, so he just...
Yeah, we'll have Joel Brovelight in here. He's going to offer us an explanation of the cloud and what it is and what it isn't. And if you've got questions for us or you've got comments or maybe even some bracket-busting ideas of your own, facebook.com/techradio is a fantastic place to...
You want to commiserate with how bad my bracket is already.
Yeah, and you... Now, do you bracket filler outers? Do you link those up and share those with other people then too, and compare them?
Most of the apps kind of allow you to go look in. So actually,
yeah.
I only did one where I actually paid money. So it was $5 pool. I mean, if that were legal. And it's fun to go already and look in at people's friends. I think I'm 94th out of like 105 already. So not so good after the first day.
Not so good. But anyway, if you've got comments about that, like I said, the Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, great place to go. Pose those questions to us. If you have other comments or other detailed questions that you'd like for the show, of course, email those to us. If you're a little camera shy and don't want to be on the radio, you know, with your telephone, send us an email,
yep,
midday@sdpb.org. We love that. You can be as brief as you want, or if you want to explain exactly how old your computer is, what it's running, how much RAM it's got, and what you lately installed that made it stop working, those things are all wonderful things that we would like to hear about as well. But midday@sdpb.org or our Facebook site, I see we have a message in there, facebook.com/techradio. We'll be right back after this, and we're going to talk cloud. And welcome back to the second segment of today's Tech Radio, Dakota Midday Tech Radio, featuring our computer guys. We've got John T. Meyer from Nine Clouds here. Hello.
Hello again.
Hello again.
Still here.
You are still here, as hopefully many of our listeners are. You were gallivanting off to Texas the last time we spoke on the air. How did South by Southwest go for you?
Yeah, it was good. It was as busy and crazy as it always is. So many people down, geeks and nerds, gather in Austin and what they call it, Nerd Spring Break. And I was happy for, I know I missed that episode in maybe early February that you guys did, but you guys were right ahead of the curve. 3D printing was definitely one of the big things at South By. Like, people couldn't stop talking about it. There was even people walking around. Some guys, big marketing campaigns, had these boxes strapped around their waist and these devices that would stick out almost like a robot in front of them, and they were printing things right there for you.
They did what?
Well, they basically had 3D printers, like, attached to their bodies, and then they were printing things.
And what were people having printed?
Well, so I can't remember that. I should look up the company. I'll put it on the Facebook. I don't want to guess. I'll put it on the Facebook page. The guy had a keynote address where they laser scan a device. So say, I don't know, my watch or my phone or something, your coffee mug here.
Mm-hmm.
They'd scan it and then it would then print it in 3D, like a physical copy of that.
Okay.
So, I mean, everyone was talking about that. It seemed like 3D was big. Location was also really big. CEO Dennis Crowley, CEO of Foursquare, gave a talk about, you know, so we're all using these devices and our phones know where we're at with GPS. Now how can we use this location data to actually make our life better, to make a world an easier place? So,
I noticed that the latest Android update that I pulled down within the last week, now my phone seems to want to tell me how long it's going to take me to get home at night.
Sure.
And how far I am from home at the moment, and would I like directions back home? So I'm not sure why it's
Which
trying to...
Which Vermilion is what, like 3 minutes?
If it's a five-minute commute
minutes?
For me to my office, according to Google, and why it thinks I need directions all the time to get home, I, you know, I'm not really sure. But, you know, hopefully
another 5 years from now, the car will be driving for you. So you'll just
that would be fantastic, wouldn't it? It's certainly cut down on some of the fatigue getting to Rapid City and back regularly.
But, no, overall, it was a good event. You know, there's always a lot of noise. I think gone are the days where you saw, you know, Twitter really grew from there, exploded off of South By, and then the next year Foursquare really exploded off South By. I'm not going to say it can't happen, but there's so much noise and so much traffic with all these startups trying to be kind of the startup of South by Southwest that, you know, it's almost, you can't even, nothing stands out because there's so much going on.
Sure.
So we'll see, but I didn't take away like one app or one startup that you have to, you know, have to be following, but 3D printing was certainly a big trend.
All right. Well, Joel Brovelite.
How you doing?
I'm well, sir. Welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio.
Well, seems like he needs driving directions here. He was a little slow to the studio.
Yes, I was a little slow to the studio. I had my own little tech snowstorm going on right before we came. It was quite interesting. Maybe we can get into it if we've got a little time.
Well, we'll see about that
for sure.
Maybe in the third half of the show.
Absolutely.
We do want to talk. There's a couple of Apple announcements out. I don't want to call it two-party authentication, but there's a two-factor authentication that Apple is kind of rolling out, and it dovetails right into the cloud discussion we're going to have today. So it seems like both Apple and Amazon are kind of tightening up some security practices because, you know, people are wiping cell phones of celebrities and doing other things that people really don't want people to do. So let's start our cloud discussion today by maybe talking about a little bit about how Apple in particular is maybe providing some extra protection against hackers.
Yeah, we should probably talk about, you know, what two-factor authentication is.
Yes. Yeah, would you explain that to me, please?
Does Jeff want to take it? I'll be happy to explain it, but I know, you know, we want to make sure
spread
Jeff
butter, in. Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
Hey, Jeff, what exactly, in a nutshell, is
30 seconds.
Two-factor authentication?
Two-factor authentication is normally just that. It's
that
two different ways.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, good. Well, two-factor authentication, this means you have two different types of authentication that are separate from each other. Normally, the standard is it's something you know, like a password, and it's something you have physically, like a key generator token that generates a random number that is synced back to a central set of servers so that when you put that number in, it matches on both sides, both the server side and your client side when you display it. It doesn't have to be that way, but in simple terms, it's just two ways. It could be two different passwords, though that's not very good two-factor authentication or security, but usually it's something you know and then something you physically have to have on you, either a card, a token, something like that, and you need both of those to access your account.
That sounds complicated, Jeff.
Well, actually, it's pretty simple. A lot of online games and stuff do it, where you log in with your username and password, and then it just asks you for your authentication code. You take out your smartphone. These apps can run smartphones or a dongle. You press a key, and it gives you a 5-6-digit number, and you just enter it. And that way, even if someone stole your password, because that number is constantly changing, they can't steal the number. So they can't log in as you, even if they know your username and password, without that physical device, either your phone or that token.
Jeff, is this typically something that you would have to do every time you wanted to access that information, or is this something that when you're setting your phone up or you're setting your iPad up for the first time that you need to do just to make that first connection?
Right. It kind of goes both ways depending on the service. Two-factor authentication is where you're logging into. If you log into your bank is the one controlling. If you log into WoW, it's Blizzard, the company behind the game that controls it. If you log into Google, Google controls all those parameters. And some will require you, like most banks, every single time. Some, like Blizzard, will require you once a week, and then it kind of remembers the computer. Except if you go to a new device, you always have to log in. Google does it very occasionally where you register the device, and then you don't have to really change it very often. You know, it's a mixed match depending on the level of security required for the data you're trying to protect.
Okay. Well, you know, anything that's going to make me more secure, but I'm a little wary, Joel, about this becoming really complicated for me.
Yeah, well, you know, to boil it down, I mean, ideally, two-factor authentication, which is what we're talking about, just like Jeff said, should make it easier for us and safer by basically requiring that you have something you know and something you have. So you might know your password and you have to have your iPhone with you. So that, in a nutshell, is what two-factor authentication is. And that is what Apple and Amazon and a whole host of other companies are going to. Basically, rather than just you being able to change your password by calling in and you know, having some arbitrary information that somebody could get from your garbage or your email or your Twitter account or any number of things, you not only have to have, you know, the information such as your Social Security number, but you also have to physically have something, whether that may be proximity of location, verified through GPS, or having your iPhone with you, things like that.
Sure. Okay. Well, and these are going to primarily be, I would imagine we're focusing on cloud today, but this is going to go far beyond that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, using the cloud, that's how it verifies that you indeed have what you have as far as a physical device. So the cloud in and of itself, to start going into that
discussion. Yeah, we better get in there because I'm starting to get lost.
Go into that discussion. The cloud is just a fancy word that means the internet. You don't need it's not a separate thing from the internet. The internet, the cloud, quote unquote, does not work without the internet. The cloud is just basically online storage of whatever information that is. So this isn't separate from the cloud. This is the same thing.
I'm getting visions of Matrix or something.
You know, I heard, you know, I knew we were going to have this discussion. I read a bit of information earlier this week. 30% now, I know that this would be a different statistic in South Dakota, but 30% of people in the U.S. think cloud computing has to do with actual clouds. 30% of people polled.
What are you going to say? So, are you going to say higher in South Dakota or lower?
No, definitely. It's got to be lower because especially our listeners.
Okay, good. Go ahead, Jeff.
And for most people, it's actually a very simple concept. Really what the cloud is instead of the app running on your local computer, your document being saved to your local hard drive, you're just running the program on servers on the internet, and you're storing your data on servers on the internet. It just, instead of running locally, you're just running the programs and storing the data up on the internet on servers that are housed across the world. That's really the only difference between normal computing and cloud, is it's just not running local on your machine anymore.
Well, I think it's good to think of things that you use that you might not know are in the cloud. So Gmail. I love Gmail because I'm here on my laptop today, but if I go to the public library, I can log into my email on their machine. If I go to Joel's house or if I go travel, you know, to Europe, I can get my email. Flickr, if you'd like to put your photos up on Flickr. Dropbox.
Yes.
Storage in the cloud. So I think a lot of people probably are using it without realizing they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. In
I
fact,
guess I am.
Many people have been using the cloud well before the cloud buzzword, which, by the way, is just what it is. It's a buzzword, a word that was invented to conceptualize something.
Yeah, and to market. Yeah.
You know, way back to when everybody's using Hotmail or even AOL, that was cloud computing. Anything that, as Jeff says, isn't necessarily stored on your computer, although parts of it could be, that would be the cloud. If you upload your photos to Twitter, that you're using the cloud. If you upload your photos to Walmart to print, you're using the cloud. You're just uploading them to the internet, or the cloud, if you want to call it that way, using it as a storage device or a way to move things, or in some of the examples Jeff cites, a way to actually access information or programs. A lot of people play games on the cloud. If you've played Farmville on Facebook, you've used the cloud. If you've used Facebook, you're using the cloud because none of that information is actually stored on your computer.
Well, and I think the question, so why did this happen or why it has become so ubiquitous, is the cost of these servers that Jeff talks about have just gone down. I mean, what is the S3, maybe Jeff knows, the Amazon's cloud, you can buy your own for own storage space for what, it's like $39 a month or something?
Yeah, and they actually keep decreasing their CPU cycle cost and server cost every month, it seems like. You have to remember, the servers they buy hold and this is true of any cloud service, thousands upon thousands of users at once. It's actually much more efficient and much more energy efficient to house that, allow that stuff up on the cloud than to run it on every local PC that most of the time is actually seen idle. Even when you run a program, your local PC is so powerful and fast enough that most of the time is set in an idle state. It's just kind of wasting power, lighting up the in the background. So you get a lot of efficiencies in putting stuff on the cloud too.
So the cloud is green. And we found out that the cloud is efficient because it seems like it's come a long ways since the early days of logging in and getting Hotmail. So now if you have a certain Apple device or another device that you take a photo on or you save a spreadsheet, automatically it's on your other devices. It's on your laptop. It's on your iPad. It's wherever. So it's more convenient for folks to use the cloud.
One of the simplest applications, or not meaning an app, but uses of the cloud that I love is Apple's iCloud with my calendar. So if I'm sitting here and I remember I have a meeting, I can punch it into my phone, and then it shows up on my laptop, on my iPad, on everything. Or if a friend of mine wants to book an appointment with me, they can put it, like, we can share a calendar. They can put it onto the calendar, and then I have it. It's great.
A convenience. So I'm going to probably go around each one of you and ask this question. I'm going to start with Jeff, and I'm going to say, because we all probably have our own answer to this, but what would the cloud not be used for? So what would you not even think about using the cloud for, or is there something like that? Jeff?
Well, in my situation, I kind of have two clouds. I have what we call the public cloud, which is the Internet and what we've been talking about. And we also run private clouds internally, and most corporations actually do. So what I'm going to kind of talk about more is the public. On the private, that's not so much the security problems and stuff, and other issues with the cloud are not as a big of a deal. But on the public cloud, sometimes it's a variability. If you need to take something and you're not always going to have instant Internet access, cloud's probably not the best choice to be running that app or storing that data. It's good for a backup copy, but probably not great for if you want to work on it and save it and not have reliable Internet connection. And then the other problem I have is there's a lot of security issues that run in it, and especially for some businesses, regulation problems they may run into, because the cloud is global. A lot of people assume when you send an email to Gmail, it's in the United States stored on a server here. That's not necessarily true. Google has servers across the world, including Ireland is one of their big stores of Gmail data. So when your email goes out, it's not necessarily stays in this country and could be stored in another country, and the data protections by law are for that country, not the United States' laws.
And the problem is that certain legislatures in states and in the U.S. may prohibit where U.S. data can be stored on certain citizens.
Yes. The federal government has very strict regulations, as does the IRS, on their data and what they can use. And it's gotten to the point where Amazon and some of the other big cloud vendors have set up what they call government clouds, which are specialized clouds just for federal and state governments, because we can't move our data offshore. And basically, it's the same cloud everyone else uses, but we are guaranteed that the data stays in the United States and United States data centers.
Joel?
A lot of head shaking over there.
Yeah, I worry.
Have a seizure or
yeah, I worry about you saying this cloud and that cloud and that cloud and that cloud, because that can be really confusing. Jeff is absolutely right. There are ways to protect data that might be shared over multiple computers or accessed from a computer under an umbrella or behind a wall or even in a closed circuit. But technically, the cloud is still. There's really only one cloud, and basically the cloud is a network of computers, whether that's a public one or a private one. It's still all the cloud. To think that you have to connect to Apple's cloud and you can't connect to Google's cloud and can be really confusing. I think we're in a really funny time to answer your question. Is there things I wouldn't want to have on the cloud?
Yeah.
I prefer using the article, the cloud, rather
sure.
than a cloud.
Cloud,
so we don't confuse
it.
Until the National Weather Service copyrights and we can't use it anymore.
Right. We're in a very, I think, narrow band of time where you're going to be able to choose to do that. right now you can choose to say, well, I don't want to do my taxes in the cloud. I'm going to go ahead and buy Intuit software and install it on my computer rather than upload that information online to Intuit server or run the, you know, if you've done your taxes
for free. Which
if
you bought an Apple computer in the last 18 months, you don't even have a disk drive.
Right, exactly. Or an optical drive.
Sure.
Yeah. But I think in not too long, in certainly within 5 years, you're not going to have a choice but to store your information and run your applications and do the things you want to do using the cloud, whether that's purchase books from Amazon, because you're already doing that on the cloud. You know, local storage of information is going to get fewer and far between, and then it's going to be a hobby thing. So,
well, I see it going both extremes.
Yeah, like, yeah, you're
gonna
have, exactly. It's going to be
if
a very,
you're not in the cloud, you're going to have it like in a pen and paper in
and
your
it's going
bank
to be,
deposit box.
And it's going to be a lot more expensive the longer it goes. So keep it off the cloud if you want, but you're not going to be able to do that very long.
It just, I mean, what immediately worries me is, what if I wake up someday and I can't remember my password?
Well, you could worry about you could worry about all sorts of things, but you know, as I was discussing with my wife, you know, while I was running late, I said, you know, ideally and hopefully, as we work with these technological devices and advancements, when they really stick and when they really work is when they're so easy that you don't really need to worry or work so hard. You just get it done in the same way you go make macaroni and cheese. You know, there's no, I have to invent macaroni and cheese and create the powder from nothing. You just open the box and make it. Ideally, that's what cloud computing will be like and is starting to be like.
And I
now.
Think as the industry changes, a lot of these companies that we're talking about, they will have a greater sense of responsibility and the government probably will step in. I mean, 3 years ago, Dropbox was like the hot startup. We all were like, yeah, it's really cool. I can put my pictures up in Dropbox. And
but
now, I mean, it's a bigger deal than that.
I do have to inject. That is my biggest fear, actually, because the last time they stepped up, they actually closed and seized data, and a lot of people lost the data and never to recover it in the mega upload. The biggest worry, really, outside of security issues of the data itself, protection of people, other people having access, which actually, if you put it in the cloud, whoever that company for sure has access, unless you encrypt it yourself, is that companies like this have gone bankrupt. There's no guarantee that company you're using for backup services are going to exist in 6 months to a year. So you always have to make sure you protect your data still. The cloud doesn't get you necessarily out of making multiple copies of your data and protecting it, because there have been companies that have gone bankrupt and your data is just gone immediately with no recourse.
And didn't Microsoft didn't Microsoft just come out with a like an ad saying, hey, you know, you maybe don't want to be using Google because you should be using us because they're gonna mine your data.
Yeah,
and we're not going to do that.
Every free service has to be paid for somehow, and there's not too many free services that are not going to mine. You can pay Google so they don't mine your data, and that's true of pretty much any free service if you're willing to pay for it. But those free services still have to be paid for somehow. So you just have to walk in with your eyes open and realize what's going on and make your appropriate decisions based off your level of concern.
Okay. Well, unless we have any other questions or comments about the cloud, we're going to
It's a great topic.
We're gonna wrap this up.
Well, it won't be the last time we talk about it, and it certainly won't be the last time we talk about you know, cloud versus terrestrial or having things locally on your computer.
Or extraterrestrial.
Yeah, extraterrestrial, which would be another version.
A new type of cloud.
You could actually, that's a synonym for the cloud, is extraterrestrial.
Can I have a cloud on the moon?
One thing that's cloud-related I'll just bring up at the end, and it's kind of a mix of security, and actually the Department of Justice is trying to change this, and they made a big headline this week. I don't know if you know this, but emails in the cloud, if they're more than 108 days, are considered seizable without warrant or a reason by law enforcement, which means if you have a new email that you just read and it's stored up in the cloud on Gmail, they actually need a subpoena to be able to read that email. But after 108 days or 180 days, they no longer need a subpoena. They can just request Google to turn all your older emails over, and they have to do it. The Department of Justice is actually saying that's really a bad idea to have separate rules, and they're trying to get that fixed where the law enforcement would actually require a subpoena or have to go to a judge and request permission to be able to pull your old emails. But right now, any email past either 108 or 180 days is open access for law enforcement without any safeguards.
That's something to follow up on. Very interesting. Thank you, Jeff. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that that we've talked about, I think you were going to put some brackets up, maybe the CBS app on the Facebook page,
sure,
John, and possibly any cloud links we might have. We will put those on our Facebook page almost immediately, facebook.com/techradio. If you haven't been there, please go there. We would appreciate that. If you're on Facebook, and we know through data mining that many of you are... I'm not here to scare you. We're here to be your friend. Go to facebook.com/techradio, hit the like button, and post something for the show. It's pretty fun and easy to do. Again, or you can call for help. You can call 1-800-524-3604. It's a toll-free call anywhere, actually, in the U.S. or in South Dakota. 800-524-3604 is the number. And, of course, the email address, midday, MIDDAY@sdpb.org, is the way to connect with our panelists, Joel Brovelite, John T. Meyer from Nine Clouds, and Jeff Lurick from BIT and Peer. You can access these folks and their comments and their questions by doing that, midday@sdpb.org. We'll be right back after this with more of the show. And we're back to the third half of Tech Radio, South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Thanks for listening. The number to call is 1-800-524-3604. Our email address is midday@sdpb.org. If you'd like to connect with us that way, please go ahead and do that. Boy, Joel, any Mac news or Apple news that we need to talk about? I see Boz is going to be in Rapid City. What's going on with that?
I'm actually not sure. I think you probably know better about. I've seen Woz live a couple of times, and he is, he's a very great. He's a very good speaker. You wouldn't think so if you've read some interviews or you see some of the portrayals of him in both the book. But he's very engaging and just knows so much. So
if you wanted an entertaining evening with a tech giant,
it's not just a regular guy that's going to drone on about stuff you don't care about.
And we should, some listeners, say who he is.
Absolutely. Steve Wozniak is the gentleman we're referring to. He is the co-founder of Apple Computer. And probably the brain behind, the first personal computer that was widely available and, broke so much ground. And he was also, big in the tech community for games, created several, coded several games early on for Atari and did Pong. An amazing genius. Yeah. And since Apple, he retired long ago before the Mac was even out, from Apple, but still has shares and obviously still is, involved a bit there.
Yeah.
But has done other companies like mobile phone companies, and I guess he's working on something else. So it'll be very interesting, and I highly recommend anybody in that area go check it out.
So the Vakirovich Foundation, John T. Vakirovich Foundation, is bringing him in, and we should mention this, April 29th at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center, my former home last week for several days, the beautiful Rushmore Plaza Civic Center, the ever-expanding Rushmore Plaza Civic Center, is going to have, as you mentioned, Wozniak out there. He's going to apparently give a talk that's going to be about innovation and creativity. And
if I were out there, I would definitely
he'll
be going
share his views on a lot of things. He's a big philanthropist nowadays. And probably talk a little bit about giving it back, I would think. So April 29th, Rapid City, we just wanted to bring that up because you don't get a giant in the industry around these parts that often,
nope.
I don't think. So
certainly not of somebody of his stature.
And speaking of Rapid City, Belinda is on the line, and Belinda, you need some definitions here, some what a meg is and what a gig is and other things. What's the question, Belinda? And welcome to the show.
Yes, I do. I appreciate it. Thank you. And by the way, I have 4 tickets to see Steve Wozniak in my purse right now, and those were nearly sold out. And when I was at the Civic Center for a different event, and when I was there the day the tickets were released, I was there midday, and they were, I had to get like 2/3 of the way back because that was all that was left at that time. So
I got to ask Belinda.
Myself and some other folks can go see them.
I got to ask this. Did you?
Go ahead.
It's her turn to ask.
I got to ask one question before she does that because I'm just curious as heck. Were you at the Plaza Civic Center for a hockey game when you bought the tickets, or was it for something else? You don't have to be specific.
Well, the basketball tournament for high school was going on then, but actually we were there to see Jeff Dunham.
Oh, sure.
And Jeff Dunham, the ventriloquist, was there. And on the same day that the tickets were released, and I thought, this is great. I'm going to get tickets for that while I'm seeing this other event. And the Vakirovich Foundation sponsors a speaker like this every year. And the tickets are always way affordable, you know, $7. And we saw Doris Kearns Goodwin, who wrote the Lincoln book on which the current movie is based. We also saw Dave Barry, who I took my kids to him. He was incredibly funny. That was 4 or 5 years ago. And and they always have a well-known speaker, and it always comes around Easter time-ish is when they generally schedule it. So
sure.
I always watch to see who it is.
Well, let's get back to your question about bandwidth. Go ahead.
Yep. I understand the difference on your home, whether it's cable versus landline, that like 1.5 megs is kind of slow, 10 megs is kind of medium, 25 or like 40 is way fast. I don't understand how that applies to gigs on your cell phone, and I super don't understand the new Fios, F-I-O-S, that I'm seeing advertised. I don't understand that part at all. So that's my question.
Well, we can take those one at a time. Gigs and megs and megabits and megabytes, they're all just measurement. And just like centimeters and millimeters, as a matter of fact, that's a great example. A megabit is smaller by one order of magnitude than a megabyte. And a megabyte is smaller by one order of magnitude than a gigabyte. So when you say megabits per second, which is what internet speed is generally measured in, you're talking 1 megabit, 1.5 megabits, 10 megabits, and that's just measures how fast the data is either coming in or going out through that thing. And when you asked about gigs on your cell phone, I kind of got to pick that one apart. What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, I don't understand this speed reference do you have differences in speeds on your cell phone internet like you would on your household internet?
Yeah, there is difference, depending on your carrier and how fast that connection is. It could be any range. So if they say a gig, that's just 1,000 megabits in the case of a speed on your cell phone. That would be 1,000 megabits.
But I think maybe the confusion
is way fast.
It would be, but I'm certain. Go ahead, Kent.
Yeah. So I think the confusion is they're allotting you a certain amount of data a month. So like my cell phone I get 4 gig of data. That doesn't mean I get 4 gig of bandwidth.
Right.
That's a different thing. The size of the pipe coming to my phone is very small compared to the size of the pipe going to my house.
So what's confusing for you, we were definitely going to get there, is the speed at which data comes down and the amount that you're either allotted or you may have for storage, they're all using the same measurements. So you might be allowed 1,000 megabytes, which is one order of magnitude bigger than bits. We won't get into that, but 1,000 megabytes is a considerable amount of data, but that doesn't mean that your internet will actually go 1,000 megabits fast. So,
okay.
Basically, you know, you may have been told wrong or may not have been made clear for you, but you have one speed that would be how fast you can download things. And then you have another number which tells you how much you're allotted, or in some cases, how much physical storage your phone might have, because that's another measurement a lot of phones have. Like, you might have the 16 gigabyte iPhone, which means that you only have storage. That much storage on the actual device itself. So there's kind of three things we're gauging there, but using the same language for all of it, which can be kind of confusing.
Yeah, and I think yep. Yeah, and you can't purchase faster internet for your phone, you know, like you can at home. You were saying, you know, I could get DSL, or I could get a cable modem, and the cable one, I could maybe buy a slower package, or maybe the gaming package, or maybe the ultimate package. You can't do that on the phones. You're going to get what you get. So
okay,
that might be, yeah, so that might be a little bit of
the
confusion
Fios?
Too.
Fios,
Fios
is just a Verizon branding name. Just like saying Mountain Dew is something that Pepsi sells. Fios is just Verizon's name for a certain service. It doesn't have a speed attached to it, although they have a certain speed attached to it, saying that the internet is 50 or 25 megabits. That would be how fast it actually is. But Fios it's not something anybody else but Verizon uses, because it's a trademarked name. So that actually has no bearing on the discussion we're having. But again, because they brand these things, because it's easier to digest, frankly, as a consumer when it's branded rather than just given a stream of numbers, you've seen how well that goes.
It is weird, though, because the logo has a little eye, so it looks like iOS.
It
like
sure
Apple,
does.
Which is
exactly.
Sure does.
It does.
So,
but it has nothing to do with
it. So don't worry about that. That's just a name, just like Doritos. So that doesn't mean anything.
He's killing me here. I'm hungry and thirsty.
That's
at the
exactly
same
what's happening. I'm hungry. So don't worry about that name. What you really want to dig into is those numbers. That's what matters.
Okay.
Did
well,
we
I
help,
appreciate
Blenda?
That. It does clarify.
We totally confused her.
Well, no, it's been, and the key thing that I'm takeaway is that I can't choose internet speeds on my cell phone like I can on my house phone.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
and,
not without
and,
switching
and,
services.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, so I guess technically, to be clear, you could choose a carrier. If you're on a 3G carrier right now and you were going to go to a 4G LTE carrier, I mean, you could choose to have a better service. But,
yeah,
but
I think
not,
what, yeah.
But, yeah.
I think what Kent meant was you don't have as many choices and as many choices per service as you do at home. You might, in your cable modem at home, be able to go with four different plans. However, with Verizon on your mobile phone, you may only have one or two options depending on your phone or the carrier. And to go faster, you might have to go to an entirely different phone or
and
carrier.
That's where they make money off of you, is once
of
you
course.
Go over your data. That's where they. Really
Although
start.
That's blending yeah. a bit. Certainly in a couple of years, it's going to be a different landscape altogether as more people are using mobile internet via their phone, like you're talking about now.
And they're going to have to with Belinda, do you have any other questions for us today? It's been delightful talking to you.
She should just be a guest on the show.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she can live blog the WAS thing for us from the Rushmore Cloud Civic
go.
Center.
There you yeah. go. Yeah, I feel very honored to have gotten tickets because they went so fast. So I'm pleased we
okay.
happened to be there at that time.
And we appreciate you offering those to us, but we're going to have to decline.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Belinda.
Thanks for information.
But have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Fantastic. I didn't realize they were all sold out already, but that's a great thing if you can get those tickets and
that'll be fun.
We can. I'm going to be looking for tweets that night. Hopefully, somebody's got their phone out.
Maybe
they're gonna
follow, maybe.
Yeah, that would be fantastic, and we'll have to follow that on the
Facebook.
Speaking
of a couple of tweets, I've got a couple minutes here left in the
show.
I was tweeting my friend Megan here in Sioux Falls, who recently, she and her husband, Corey, received the Pebble Watch, if you remember that. We talked about that a long time ago on Kickstarter, almost a year ago. It was, at the time, the biggest Kickstarter campaign to date. They raised about $10 million.
Right.
And it's basically a watch, kind of which kicked the interest in what the rumored Apple iWatch, but that will give you notifications. So if you're getting a call coming in or a text and your phone's in your pocket, it's right there on your wrist. And so I asked her if she enjoyed it. She said they finally got it. And they really like it. She's worn it all week. Feels really natural. So,
Excellent.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah,
Yeah, I was just saying we're getting towards the waning minutes of the
waning moments.
Waning moments. I'm sorry, I got it wrong.
Did you have something you wanted to slip in here at the
no,
end?
No, not necessarily. I just want to make sure we get to everything we wanted to get to.
I think we covered
well. Well, if you would have came on time, maybe we would.
I know, isn't that the truth?
It is all the time we have for the show. I'm sorry. I apologize. I want to thank our panelists today. Joel Brovelite, thank you very much. Amos Asup from SDN Communications will be back with us in 2 weeks, and we hopefully his head is being filled with knowledge that he can share with us at this very moment. Nine Clouds' John T. Meyer, thank you so much for being here, and good luck with the rest of your brackets. And
I'm going to need it.
You're going to need it, I imagine that. Statistically, even more so. Jeff Litterick from BIT and Peer, thank you for joining us today, Jeffrey.
Yep, everyone have a good weekend.
And reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, an MP3 version of the show will be posted to the web soon, along with the show notes. Tech Radio is online at facebook.com/techradio. Please join us there.